Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, hello everyone, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live. I'm Kay Thompson. I'm here with
Wayne Gilman,
and also who's been going off on assignment,
Eric Payne. But you guys want to? I'm just helping these guys make sure you sit close to
yeah.
the
mic.
Right. And you figured we would know this by now, okay?
Especially going back so many years in Brooklyn,
right? That's
over
true.
In New York,
that's
you know?
True.
But you know one thing, I was very impressed. I'm quite sure that you all were also, President Obama, when he did his presentation from the White House, you know,
mm-hmm.
he dealt with issues dealing with Iran and the criminal justice system, Hezbollah, Israel. And he also talked about incarceration of minorities. He talked about cutting the sentences, about the long incarceration, about repeat offenders, the length of the time that minorities, meaning blacks and Latinos, get.
Mm.
And so he went into that and he reached out, you know, via an organization called My Brother's Keeper.
Right.
My Brother's Keeper. So
I did hear that.
About that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's regarding criminal justice, just when the long incarceration terms, you know. And he was talking about the repeat offenders programs that will lessen with work with the community some kind of way. But we're going to be, you know, we'll keep people abreast of that because then we'll
mm-hmm.
find out more of that. His, also, in his presentation of issues, he was talking about Iran, he said it was a detail, and I really understood a lot of issues such as those dealing with nuclear weapons systems and sanctions. And then you were talking about the inspectors on the ground with the possibility of people not adhering to proliferation of weaponry in Iran and Iran cheating. And he said there are things in place for that. But anyway, all in all, it was a very good presentation.
He spoke for a long time.
Well, he did.
Yeah.
And he stood up, and there was one person from a station that you know of.
Oh, CBS.
Yeah.
The whole incident where he questioned his, well, basically, he felt that the president was being somewhat insensitive
yeah.
with respect to the whole issue with Iran. Since there's still prisoners of war, American prisoners of war there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of, if I could just throw my two cents in, I just really felt a moment of pride to see that Obama struck back
yes.
and just basically served the reporter Major
mm-hmm.
Garrett,
mm-hmm.
CBS White House correspondent, who I understand previously worked at Fox, had actually questioned the basis of his question, the way it was framed.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and this is so typical of this like cloak and dagger activity in trying to disarm the person who's running the country.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah, I was annoyed about that also, but but Obama, you know, really went after him.
Yeah, he did.
And he didn't take any stuff.
Exactly.
I guess he felt, this is my last time being here.
Yeah.
I'm going to
yeah.
do exactly what I want to do. I was surprised about the whole incarceration thing. Because, you know, we've been concerned about that for a long period of time.
You have done so many shows, Jay, going back in the day.
You know, and
right.
we have these young black and Latino kids here, they get put in jail by
mm-hmm.
people like Giuliani.
Right.
You know, I didn't have any love for Giuliani, boy, I'm telling you.
Right.
I'm surprised he's still around. But anyway.
Not only him, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know?
He's a comedian. I'm sorry, makes me laugh. He can say anything. He is rich enough to say anything in the world to get away with it.
And what amazes me is that he's got numbers now.
Yeah,
you know? So he's hot.
Yeah.
He's hot.
Isn't he number one?
That's what they say as far as the Republicans.
You can't have enough numbers for him because you've got more money than
yeah, numbers. Thank you. You're right. You're absolutely right. I never thought of it that way, but that's true. Yeah.
Another thing is, thank goodness, the Confederate flag is taken down.
Did he touch on that? I didn't get
no,
that.
No, I didn't hear that because I wouldn't
yeah.
remember that, you know. It was so strange the way it happened
mm-hmm.
because this young devil, you know, went into the church, and he was received beautifully by the people in the church.
Right.
He killed the people
amazing.
In the church, nine people.
Amazing.
And that caused such reactions to all people around the country. It was absolutely amazing.
Right, right.
But we'll go into that later. I wanted to go into also, we'll go into that at another time. But I also want to go into the fact that Bishop Jesper James.
Yeah.
You know, is still around. Is around. He's alive and well. He's a young guy. And he's, you know, when we had him on, you know, he's the chaplain for the New Jersey State Police. He's also an advisor to the recruiting unit, and the Attorney General's office is dealing with candidates for the state police.
Oh.
So the state police, you know, is going to be integrated.
Right, right. I hope. You know, especially
yeah.
in the state of New Jersey,
exactly.
which has had such a rich history for the races. But one thing that I have to say, and I said this before, of course, we've been off a couple of weeks now,
yeah.
but it was so ironic how he talked about how the churches would become targets.
Yeah.
And the very next day, Charleston happened.
Yeah, but not only that. Now, what happened, too, like he was on a faith-based, he was appointed a faith-based Homeland Security Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about it when Eric and I went to a press conference. And then later on, this whole thing happened with the churches.
Mm.
And the home-based, what is it, Homeland Security office in the country, they're telling the black church people, oh, I imagine they're probably preparing other churches also, that you have to have a list of things that you have to do to protect your church.
Mm-hmm.
No one can go into the church without, you know, the church either having a key or some way to get in. You cannot leave the doors unlocked. Like, before you could open, you could
right,
go to the
right,
church
right, exactly.
and you can pray and family.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore.
Wow.
And that's what Bishop Jethro James is now in charge of.
Mm.
So that's him. We're going to be talking to him tonight, and I want to hear exactly what's going on. He's also on the advisory committee for the Essex County, something or other. I'll get that from him.
Mm.
I've got so much stuff here. For. He was reappointed by the Board of Chosen Freeholders in Essex County here in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Essex County Ethics Committee, appointed by the Supreme Court. And I had forgotten when he said that. I said, the Essex County appointed by the Supreme Court, I was appointed.
Oh, really?
By the Supreme Court to the Ethics Committee.
I'm not sure.
I don't know what the heck I was doing.
That's your game ethics.
I'm in the Supreme Court.
Right, wow.
What I'm doing here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What we were assigned to do was we had to judge on some of the misdeeds that some members of the legal community, in other words, some of the attorneys.
Right, right, right.
They may have, you know, stepped over the line with the client or
right, right, the exactly.
clients with, and suing them or bringing
yeah.
them to court. And that's what we
oh, so you were like an ombudsman or
yeah,
something that would just, yeah.
Now, there were three people on each committee. I was the only person who wasn't an attorney.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Was that all right? Or,
no,
or,
that's
I mean,
what it's supposed to be. I
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that was really wild because, you know, we didn't find anybody guilty. I did.
Well, I'm so glad my case didn't come before
yeah,
you can.
These other people on there.
Yeah.
They were attorneys.
Yeah.
I was, you know,
right,
I was there
person,
as a yeah.
As an observer,
yeah.
but someone who contributed.
I'm important.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, but you can't. This was this person. You know,
wow.
I say, oh no, yeah. we're gonna give them a chance. And all of a sudden it hit me. I said, uh huh. Okay.
Yeah.
And I get you.
So now you see.
Now I'm talking about it.
Yeah, now you know how the system works.
I know
yeah.
how the system works. Well, I've known for a long time and
yeah.
get involved with the whole, you know, which called, but, you know, political stuff. Which,
right.
Which is good if you can make it good. Also, I have to say that my nephew, Congressman Donald Payne Jr., he's having his gala.
Yeah.
And this week, so I have got to get a haircut tomorrow.
You look fine.
Well, anyway, thank
mm-hmm.
you. But anyway, so that's my up-to-date stuff. Now I'm waiting for, we're going to be waiting for the bishop to call.
Yeah, right.
And if not, then we should probably call him to remind him. You know, here's a number that, you know, he should be calling in sometime soon. But
right, maybe we could,
yeah.
I know there's another phone here.
Sure,
maybe you could,
right here. Well, you talk all
yeah,
time.
Right. Well, I tell you, Kay, I mean, to be honest with you,
well.
I wish I had a chance to see all of Obama's speech, but I did see some of the highlights, and I'm glad now that he's at a position where basically he's challenging members of the press, and you know, it's just difficult to think that in this day and age, not to say that he didn't do this before, but there's a certain ease and comfort I see about Obama's demeanor now that I didn't see before. I mean, there was a time when he was extremely defensive, but I mean, the deal is most presidents have to go through that. And, of course, the job has aged him to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that I firmly believe that as we're entering the waning days of his administration, he has certainly accomplished so much for this country. And I just hope that there are enough Americans out there who can discern what is going on and not consider the next presidential contest some sort of horse race where, you know, they'll just pick somebody who can talk a lot of nonsense and lack the substance that we need to remind people that we're really living in a democracy, you know, and that there's a standard that should be upheld. And I can't think there were no major scandals with this administration thus far. I don't envision one coming down the pike. I'd be shocked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to misspeak, but I, you know, the deal is that during the Bush years, there was all sorts of stuff. I mean, just the manner in which George W. Bush was elected after the contest back in 2000 between the Democratic nominee, Vice President Al Gore, and himself. You know, there was the way that contest was settled in the Supreme Court.
Mm.
And then you fast forward, 2001 comes along, and less than a year into his presidency, we have a war.
Mm.
And that war is still going on in many instances. And then the whole controversy with that. I mean, Obama's had to clean up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, from 2008 on, and it's just amazing to see the transition this country's coming from. And it's, I'm not saying that everything is bloody perfect now with respect to the economy, but we are 10 times better than what we were even up to 5, 6, 7 years ago.
But, you know, still there's this one thing that, well, it's not only one thing, but the incarceration numbers.
Yeah,
that's
frightening.
That's slavery.
Mm-hmm.
That's a form of slavery. Because how often do we see, you know, the police picking up these kids or doing something to them, young black male, Latin, Latino also,
mm-hmm.
And putting them in jail with longer sentences than they should have.
Exactly.
Maybe because of the fact that I would imagine that, well, if you do the crime, you've got to do the time, there's no doubt about it. But the point is, a lot of times they don't have access to legal help.
Right.
Aid. And then it's like it's almost like throwing a large part of the population away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we have these jails that are filled with black and Latino.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And all kinds of awful things are going on. So when they get out, what can they do?
Right.
It's like an army of people who, you know, if they ever band together, you know.
Yeah.
Remember that film that people...
Scared Straight.
There's another one that, you know, they took over New York.
Remember that?
These people who were in jail.
Right. Yeah.
They took over New York.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
I mean, the thing is, it's crazy what goes on out here, but you're absolutely right. We are the dominant people of color that
mm-hmm.
are the dominant populace in these places,
mm-hmm.
and it's become part of an economy in certain parts of the country. There are whole towns and states that can't function without having some place to send these people to go work.
That's that.
And these penal institutions, you know, you kind of question, basically, are they really doing anything to you know, end the whole process of recidivism when it comes to having these people become repeat offenders, or that they're learning something.
That's going to be the new slave population.
Yeah, that's it.
Because there's a certain segment of people who are wealthy
mm-hmm.
and who are gaining in wealth every day because of the numbers, you know, going up within them, stocks and bonds. And,
right.
Only a certain segment of people understand that. And,
you know, I know how to follow it.
Know how to follow it very carefully. And lo and behold, if we were to do the numbers on incarceration and then do the number by race and color, it wouldn't be surprising to me at all to know these numbers, and I've heard them, and I'm quite sure you've heard them, but I don't know them, remember them, but they're vastly overpopulated by black and Latino.
Oh, yeah, no question. And I still...
And for minor things.
Yeah,
I shouldn't even be in jail at all.
Right. Well, I mean, this country lately has gotten into a quality of life issue that that is so important now that, you know, I think that they try to engage many of us to basically have some barometer on what's going on with the populace by busting, forgive the expression, young people of color just to have them locked up. But before we go any further on that, we'd like to basically welcome our guest this evening.
Yes, Bishop Jeff James, and I think he's on the line right now. Hello, Bishop.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
We're well. We're talking to you guys from the Superdome here at New Orleans, Louisiana. We're celebrating. Bishop Paul Morton, his retirement, and we're just here with the College of Bishops and so many people. They've got 20,000 of us registered here, which is quite an event.
Isn't that wonderful?
Wow. We're honored to have you for a few minutes.
Well, we're honored to be with you, and you know, it's so much happening. I listen in and ran out from my spot, and I said, you know, I've just got to get on tonight to talk about some of the things that you know, we've been doing. And when I say we, I mean we as a people, we as folk of color, issues dealing with us, everything. As a matter of fact, this is one of the few places that I've seen the American Cancer Society. And, Kay, as you know, I'm a cancer survivor, and so that message should be in our community, period. I found out that I pastor one of the few churches that actually has a cancer support group for both men and women. And so I say to the brothers, especially the brothers, get checked. 35 or older, African-American man, get checked, because you can check out of here.
Oh. Yeah, it's frightening. Very sobering.
It really is. You know, it's not just the things that happen that take us out by police and others, but it's the things that take us out that we allow to take us out as a people.
You know, Bishop, I want to tell people again that for those who are just tuning in, and when you know this already, that we are talking to Bishop Jethro James, and he is a bishop and the minister of Paradise Baptist Church in Newark, a very popular church with a fantastic program. And the bishop, we are honored to have you here. And tell us what's going on and give us an update on homeland security issues.
Well, Kay, as you know, you and your co-host, you visited our church in the midst of a meeting that we held right after the incident in South Carolina. We had planned this meeting prior to the incident, and I'm part of the faith-based unit at Homeland Security. We had identified that religious organizations were easy targets, and so we actually had a meeting set for that following Monday. We had over 700 folks there. We had to turn people away. We actually brought in the Deputy Director of Homeland Security for the state of New Jersey. We brought in an assistant United States attorney and her staff. We brought in SWAT units from local police departments. We brought in the state police, and we had all of them present along with myself and others. And we had folks to come from as far away as Delaware to find out what were the next steps. And since then, we've also met with the Attorney General in the state of New Jersey to talk about a promotion process they're trying to put in place for New Jersey State Police. And I wound up telling them that I was not satisfied with the promotion process because it's like running a 100-yard dash, and they get to start at the 20-yard line. They have 20 yards to finish, and we're back on the blocks, and we've got the 80 plus the 20 to run. I felt it didn't do anything for diversity. It didn't
What's going to be happening for diversity.
Well, there's another meeting as soon as I get back. There's another meeting. I told them that, as you know, New Jersey has a dubious home of being recognized for racial profiling. And, a lot of people don't know that. It was in 2000 that we received a federal consent decree, and the numbers have not gotten any better. And so here it is, 15 years later, as I pointed out, to the Attorney General staff and others that were present, that I haven't seen any difference. And then with the retirement of so many African Americans, the wonderful benefits that they have, if let's say you're a retired major and you're African American, you've done 25 years, you're going to go away with about $92,000 for the rest of your life plus benefits.
Wow. Yeah.
And you're under 50 years old, so you're definitely going to get a job in corporate security or something like that. And so you're pretty much set for life. And the reality is that once this crew goes, once this class goes, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. In the state police, right now in the state of New Jersey, when you look at their executive corps, I call the executive corps lieutenant colonels, majors, captains are not really considered there, and colonels. You have, I believe, one African-American lieutenant colonel, which is a woman, and she's eligible to go in the next 2 years. You have one or two Hispanic, and that's it. That's
wow.
You have two African American captains and a host of lieutenants. And so I made it very plain that that's not acceptable.
No.
If I might, Wayne Gilman here, I was just wondering, Bishop, if you could basically give us an idea how one could go about applying for these positions.
Surely. I'd be happy to. Well, the first thing is
right.
that when they offer what they call they offer a class. The problem in the state of New Jersey is that classes are offered through the budget, through the legislation process. And so if there's no budget, there is no class. Then you go online and you apply online. Usually they get between 10 and 12,000 applicants. Now, there's a trick to that game, too. If you are military, you get a leg up. So military is almost mandated. If you can pass everything else, you're in like Flint. It cuts the class. Right now we're looking at a class going in next year, and it cuts the class in half. As a matter of fact, this class with the military applicant, it's 60% military. So if you're not a brother or a sister and you have no military, you have all these qualified people, but you can't get in because the class has a finite number, which is not told up front. That's something else that I've been on about. If there are 500 African-Americans that make the grade and the class is only for 250 people and 60% of that, well, keep the math simple, for 200 people in the class and 60% of that class is already military, so now we're really dealing with 40%. Against everybody else. And so the game, you know, I tell them the ruler, if you will, if it's 12 inches to a foot, then it can't be 18 inches for us and 11 inches for them. It just can't be.
And I hope the powers that be understand that.
Well, I'm doing my best through the grace of God to make them understand. And as I said, there should not be another generation that comes up and Farrell doesn't know them. And we've got generations that Farrell doesn't know. with this promotion system that they're talking about, I don't see how it's going to do anything for diversity. And I made that very plain in a meeting just 2 weeks ago with the Deputy Attorney General. I made that real plain, and they're saying, give it a chance. Well, again, I'm back to that 100-yard dash. You start me off, I'm already.
Bishop, has there been any real press on that? Have the newspapers in New Jersey, specifically in Newark, too, has that been, is that known in, you know, the communities about the state police? About job openings?
Yes, they do an excellent job of the advertising piece. The problem is the frustration that when you, number one, let me go with the qualifications. You must have a college degree. You must have a college degree, unless you're military. And then you can have an associate working toward a college degree. You must be able to pass the mental as well as the physical piece. You need to have decent credit or an explanation why you don't have good credit. Your integrity, there is no such thing as an expungement because you were a juvenile or a sealed indictment because you were or a sealed conviction, rather, through the courts. That doesn't happen. If you've done anything in your life, you are automatically precluded. People don't know that. Oh, we got it expunged. It doesn't exist. It does not exist. They ask questions on the initial application process. Have you used any type of drugs, and I believe in the last 3 years? You'd be surprised how many folks, yeah, well, I just got out of college, and I had, you know, I smoked marijuana. You're automatically out. There's no second chance. You're just out. They also credit, they look at your family background. If you've had anyone in your family that has been incarcerated, think about this from an African-American family, you must disclose that. Wherever you work, any place, you must disclose that. Had a young officer that's on another police department wanting to move to the state police, but he didn't quite tell the truth about it. When he was a kid working at a bank, they found no charges to charge him with, but he didn't pass their what I call their time of recognizing whether you can work or not. And so because he was short, he found himself collecting unemployment. They just let him go. He didn't disclose that, and automatically that kept him out of the state police. They're just little things. And we don't think of it. Cousin Pookie is now in jail for if you have a bad driving record. We had a young man that made the academy. He went out that weekend. He start that Monday to celebrate he's making the academy. He gets caught in the DWI. I mean, you can't make this kind of stuff up.
Mr.
James, as I'm listening to you, I hate to interrupt. I'm wondering if this has always been the prerequisite for these candidates to be a part of that force.
Well, believe it or not, it used to be even worse.
Yeah.
Wow. And yet we have all this racial conflict 15 years ago to go on. Why wasn't there some sort of behavior modification program to fed out or bet out the bad apples, you know, at that particular time with all these, you know, tremendous standards that are expected of people to be participants in the program?
Well, you have people who are doing the hiring or doing the appointing, if they're of a certain race and they do not like you, you know, that's what's been happening all the time in New Jersey. I mean, we've been I had to tell Eric when he was going to Hampton, if you get stopped by a patrolman on the state police on the highway going down to Virginia. I said, don't say anything, don't do anything. Do you know what a pain in the butt that was for me? I have to say that to my
I know. I can imagine.
So, and I said, don't worry.
Kay, let me give you this. I put out a manifesto, seven things to do and not to do to the churches in the full gospel and sent it out. Number one, when you are stopped, hands are at 11 and 2 o'clock. Do not reach. Maybe your license can be in a glove compartment, whether it's in the center or not. Roll down all windows that the officers have clear view. I don't care if it's 2 degrees outside, 2 below zero. Let them have clear view of everyone in the car. Only speak when you are spoken to. Yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, is always appropriate. No sudden jerking motions, because an oops could land you in the graveyard. It's sad that we have to go through this. If you are going to get any paperwork, ask permission. My license are in the centerfold. May I? I mean, it's sad, but that's the world we lived in. Only one person speak unless they are spoken to. A lot of stuff jumps off because of backseat occupants. And I do a whole series of things. Yes, it's frustrating, but you live another day.
Yeah,
live another day. You know, don't reach for anything. Don't grab your cell phone. I'm calling mama. A cell phone will get you killed. You know, they don't know. And you've got to take so many of them die every year. But some of them, and it's not just state police, it's regular police. And I'll tell you, the worst experience I ever had is by a brother, which is sad.
Mm-hmm.
I was so glad to see a white officer. I didn't know what to do.
Boy,
wow.
Do you have any numbers, Bishop James? Do you have any numbers about the racial makeup of the New Jersey State Police?
Oh, yes, we do. And unfortunately, as I said, because I'm down here, but Kay, if I get another opportunity, we'll give you some of the makeups. But we call it command staff, and that is majors and above. We don't have one African-American major in the state of New Jersey today, not one. We have, Jules is retiring the 27th, so we have one Hispanic major. Now, this is a 2,600-man/woman force. One Hispanic major, one Hispanic lieutenant colonel, one African-American lieutenant colonel, female, so she's a double hit. That's it. That's it.
Wow.
2,600.
Talk about
now
token.
We have about 60 lieutenants and a few sergeants, but that's not command staff. They're not position decision makers, if you will. They make decisions on their level, but they're not real decision makers. And so when you look at that, how are you going to change the policy when the folk that say that they have to change, you know, talk is cheap, and they're the state police, not the phone company.
Well, I tell you, Bishop, where does the governor weigh in all this?
Well, as long as there's, you know, this falls under the Attorney General's office. And as long as the Attorney General is doing what he does, and we know in 16 months all of that will change, whether he's getting a job someplace, or he's, you know, he's running for president, whatever. But in 16 months, his gubernatorial term is up, and that's it for Christie. And as long as there's no more lawsuits, you know, what the heck? And as long as we're negotiating, what the heck? And Mark says you can do analysis, but you can't have paralysis with the analysis. We've had 15 years of analysis, and now I'm saying it appears to me that we ought to be bringing out the wheelchairs because there is paralysis.
Wow.
I really thought that things had changed.
It doesn't seem that way at all. No, you would think after all these years.
Sure.
You know. But I tell you, Bishop James, what really hit me like a ton of bricks was the irony in you discussing with us how the black churches were basically targets, and the very next day, I mean, fewer than 24 hours, we had the situation in Charleston.
Yeah.
And I'll just say to my, and I called Kay that morning and we spoke, and it was just astounding to think that, you know, you called this and then kaboom, the next day we had that incident.
Well, you know, the amazing thing was that we also called a press conference right after the incident, and Senator Pinckney, that was an assassination. Anybody else would have been an assassinate. He was a sitting state senator. I believe the word for that is not just murder, but assassination.
Right.
He was changing, if you will, the culture. He had to die for a flag to come down.
Unbelievable.
But here's the thing. When every day, including today, I get an update wherever I am in the world on what's happening in the world terrorism, whether it's ISIL or domestic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that moved me after the South Carolina incident is the fact that on Father's Day, I believe that's the third Sunday in June, if my memory is correct, so we're only talking a few weeks back, that the Ku Klux Klan in Tuscaloosa passed out packets, candy in them, with their literature in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, on Father's Day in 2015. And of course, nothing has hit a newspaper about that, nothing. But the reality is that not only is the Klan live and well, but Jim Crow is alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
And until we start realizing that domestic terrorism, you've had some things that happened, and as I said, because I'm here, I don't have my notes with me, but you've had some things that happened in New Jersey. You've had some things that have happened in New York. Some of the biggest things that domestic terrorists do, one of their latest things is this swatting thing. So if I want to disrupt wherever you are, especially in the black church, and they did it in Paterson, New Jersey, at the a local mosque, they had a swatting incident just a week ago. A week ago, Thursday. And said, well, you know, and here's the scary part. These are people, please, Kay, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, I wanted to know, just if you could familiarize ourselves with what is swatting. What does that mean?
Swatting is calling the police and saying that there's hostages being held in such and such a one. There's bomb making going on in such and such a place. And so what they do, they dispatch a SWAT team down. They come in with you know, all the equipment, and so they're doing it at mosques and churches. And so can you imagine the kind of chaos that they cause? And it's really expensive, and they've got to go through everyone there to make sure that this is a hoax. That's all part of domestic terrorism.
I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, it's been around. It's not you haven't heard because it doesn't happen in great numbers, but I think what I fear the most is the cost association of having these teams deployed, and it turns out to be a dud.
Yeah. And here's the thing that was amazing about the event we had 2 weeks ago in Newark. You know, you see so much television, and you think that's how it goes down. But if there's an incident where they think it's a what we call an active shooter's incident, so we don't think of someone active coming in the church and shooting it up. We don't think of someone coming in a prayer meeting and just starting shooting. How do you get your people out? Who are the folks in security? We don't think about visitors come, especially in the black church. And if you're dressed a certain way and look a certain way, we'll take you right to the pastor, right to the deacons, right to the stewards, right to the trustees. We don't even think about that. And yet and still, what we're looking at now is what is an active shooter and how do you get most of your people out alive? And then you've got to learn flight and fight. If they're going to kill you anyhow, what do you have to lose? And so there are things that we talk about. Ushers, there should be an exit plan for you to get what we call your key people out. There should be somebody assigned to the pastor, somebody assigned. We pull in park. You should be facing out in park. Somebody needs to have that car key to move you from the premises. I mean, there's all kinds of things. How do you contain that shooter? How many churches have fire drills?
Yeah.
We do it
all that's very important, yeah.
We do it for
it sounds like we're going backwards.
Let's talk about a church that has a nursery. How do I do the most psychological damage to everyone? I kill a pastor, brings everybody together. I come and shoot up your nursery, brings everybody together. You know, these are things, because I couldn't even picture my grandchildren being hurt. And then I'm not going to want to act like a pastor at that point. Not at all. And these are the kinds of things, these are the kinds of things that we don't have conversations about.
And yeah. So Homeland Security, that's what we're doing now in the faith-based world.
In the various churches? All over the state?
I'm sorry?
Are these meetings or, you know, informative sessions going on in the various churches all over the state or states?
All over the state of New Jersey. I'm here with the bishop from New York. He has asked me to look at doing a presentation there. But just for your listeners, the first thing you have to do is a assessment of your facility. And mm-hmm. and we have a document that we have created just for that assessment, just for that.
As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about some of these mega churches that a lot of our pastors of color are in charge of. I mean, it must be awfully difficult to, I don't want to use the word quarantine, but, contain or at least scrutinize who's coming in and out of
yeah.
some of these facilities because, you know, there have been places I've even seen on TV that are so huge.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you keep track of someone in a crowd like that?
Well, it's not as hard as you think. You train everybody. You have your security captains, and they have their assignments. But you train your greeters to recognize suspicious behavior. You may even have a place, a visitor's section, and you section that off. And you put folks that look just like everybody else, but their job is really security. We spend more money on guarding our cars than we do our congregation.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, we'll put you got armed
yeah.
security. Yeah, you got armed security in the parking lot.
Right.
Wow, and they're armed.
And they don't have to be the governor, the president, the mayor. They have armed security, and the only way you know they're armed is by something in that's coming out of their ears. But the reality is that a radio can be wonderful if a greeter comes in. Someone comes, and we've had this at Paradise Church, as you've been aware, because of what I do, my life has been threatened. And the reality is this. We come in, and we're, you know, I thank God for Pinckney's sister because she said something at the bail hearing for the young man. She says, everybody said I forgive you, but you killed my brother. And she says, my brother knew I was a work in process. I'm not there yet. And I think she was probably more honest than any of us because if you do something to my family, I believe in forgiveness. But I can sing that old Negro spiritual. Please be patient with me, for the God is not through with me yet. When He gets through, you know. And so until we start understanding the significance of Homeland Security and the significance of what we call soft targets. McVeigh, we forget about McVeigh in Oklahoma City. Soft
right.
target. Soft target. But it never hit our community. Now it has hit our community. We worry about our children. We'll fight all day. Our children need to have fire drills. We can't have, I mean, the law said that we can't lock doors with chains because there must be digress and egress. And yet and still in the church, you walk in, kill everybody, and take one of their cars out of the parking lot and leave.
Bishop, do you know if this kind of training is going on right now in the school system?
Yes, school systems are
mandated.
School systems are mandated to have those kinds of plans. They're supposed to work with the local OEM, Office of Emergency Management. They're supposed to have fire drills on a regular basis. They're supposed to be training by local police as to how to evacuate, what to do, lockdown, dot, dot. You hear it all the time. Bomb school is locked down, dot, dot, mm-hmm. dot, dot, lockdown. There are some things that they don't talk about. For example, you're supposed to wait for certain people before they go in. I mean, Columbine was one of those situations. They waited for some folks to show up. I say it's an all-hands call. You know, if anything jumps off, those that are trained need to be throughout the sanctuary. There are certain things that you have to recognize. There should be always someone in the balcony that's aware. And this is not to make anybody afraid, but it's supposed to make you aware.
But you can't help but feel the fear factor. I mean, even though, you know, we're going for reassurance and the comfort and solace that the church provides on a weekly basis. But, you know, it's still, you know, just a tall order not to think that your hands could be, and your life could be in jeopardy as a result of somebody's idle hand.
You know, what's amazing, this is domestic terrorism. You imagine if they wanted to do some, as I said, because I get an update every day, I'm aware of things that never hit the news. I'm aware of what the Klan is doing. But also, we need to talk about the terrorism from our own neighborhood. A year ago in Newark, New Jersey, we had 10 churches get hit. 10
wow.
churches. They robbed our people. This wasn't terrorists. This was Pookie, Ray Ray, and Shanae. You know, the offering was X dollars on Sunday. You know,
what were they doing? Were they stealing or what? What was taking place? What was the action? What were they doing?
They sat in the congregation, stood up, and the offering pulled out the guns and said, "Okay, everybody,
oh my goodness,
put your wallet
wow.
and what." I mean, we don't talk about that. And that's the scourge of our own neighborhood. One of the things that I tell folk, I've never seen, people are caught up on power. But I don't see any white guys selling drugs on 15th Avenue in Newark. You know, the respect factor. And then that's another thing, the respect factor. I had to go out Sunday. I know these young men. I got a dice game going across the street from the church. And so I go out and say, "Yo," they said, but Bishop, we tight. I said, "Exactly." He said, "Well, you my man." I said, "Yeah, but Miss Jones, y'all got that." I said, "And then that herb y'all smoking." And you know what? They said, "All right, you got that." But I had to go out and talk to them. I mean, there were things, you know, and I'm going back years, but if that was Cousin Kate, we saw Miss Kate. You know, whatever we were doing, we moved it down the street. We didn't dare do anything by the church and whatnot. We didn't. There were things that you just didn't do. And I don't know where, as a people, we're going. I don't know, you know, you fight for jobs going full circle to get you in the state police, but you can't finish high school. And then you buy the hype. For example, someone gave Newark $1 million for kids to go to college. And there was a big press conference, and everybody talked about $1 million. I said, well, the average child that graduates from a Newark high school needs a year to 2 years remediation. Bam. I said, so if we take 10 kids, pay for the remediation, now there's 4 years of tuition. That's all you're going to get from the $1 million. Maybe 10. And so we, you know, $1 million sounds like a lot, and it is if it's your lottery ticket and you want to stay home and even if you win $1 million now, you're only going to get like 33% tax bracket, so you're going to get roughly $640,000 after taxes. You got to go to work, too.
That's right. Dropping the bucket.
You got to go to work. You got to go to work. You can't buy a $1 million house. You know, and until we have the financial training and all of that, and so I see security for us is economically as well socially and events. How does African Americans deal with wealth? You know, and the wealth that we have is usually through our homes, and we are consumers. We are consumers, and so I look at all that, but somehow we manage to get a nice car, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we don't go to college. We don't pay.
Right.
We don't pay tuition. We don't get involved in organizations. We don't get involved in occupations that they're never going to lay you off.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard of someone in New Jersey. DC, C&P, Department of Families and whatever, permanency. But you don't get laid off. Old diapers. You don't get laid off being a diapers worker. You don't get laid off.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, interesting. There's certain careers. But you don't get laid off. Good at what you do. And they say, well, Joe Blow is taking over. The other thing, you know, we just don't want to stay in school. I can't give you a job if you can't read. And then some of the ones that have stayed in school can't comprehend. So it's just like you can't read. You read it, but you don't understand it. And you know, I look at Homeland Security. A lot of people don't know TSA is part of Homeland Security. They offered me last summer 100 jobs for college students. Of course, I went to our local college to get those 100 jobs. And the problem I had was that half the young folks couldn't take a urine test and be clean from marijuana. I mean, how do you help, you know? So here's a chance, and everybody thinks TSA is just the folks that check your bags. TSA is part of Homeland Security. You can have any kind of job there is. In the state police, they have 122 careers. If you think you can have the aptitude to be a pilot, then put you in pilot school. That's why it's so important. If you're a forensic expert, and that's what you can be. There's so much that is offered to us, and when you look in the ranks, you say, where are we? Sisters even want clerical staff. Clerical staff working for the state pays well, and there's opportunity to go to school, move up. You're in a wonderful position, and you get hooked up. And I'm a brother, but you get hooked up with a pookie that ain't gonna work, don't sell drugs, take your car and wreck it, and you lose your job. What is wrong with us? Okay, you know I'm the father of two daughters, and so you know I'm dead on that.
I'm dead on that.
You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I can relate thoroughly and concur 1,000% with what you're saying. But, you know, we have a certain apathy with us that, I don't know, some people say it stems from slavery. You know, I really don't know what the answer is. I mean, you throw some questions out here that are very salient, you know, for the average person to understand. But, you know, have you any answers?
Well, sir. One of the things that I think that has to be the answer that we keep plugging, we keep doing what I do. We much of what we do is thankless. Much of what we do is information. But the other thing that I'm most proud of, I've got a couple of my young folks down here, and we had to struggle. They come from parents that don't have or single-parent homes, but I want them to see another side of the world. I want them to see folks that are doing things. I want them to meet folks that are willing to help them out. I told one of the young ladies with me, I said, you know, you don't have to go to Yale. You know, you can go to Williams-Patterson. If you get a degree and you're good at what you do, 3 years out of school, you're making a difference. You're making a living for yourself. There's nothing wrong with a small school. Have one young lady, she's going to Drexel at at $80,000 a year, and thank God she's got family. They gave her $40,000 a year. Her family's got to raise another $40,000. Another young
wow.
lady who has the same grades, they gave her a free ride to Jersey City State, which is about $40,000 a year. She took it. Smart move. I keep telling folks, don't get caught up on the atmosphere. And then I have a friend who's at University of North Carolina, can't think of Greensboro, which is, I think, Southern Carolina University. He's the police chief there, former state trooper. And so I make the phone call. Hey, man, need you to do me a favor. Got a kid that's bright, needs to get out of this area, just need some help financially. What can we do? And until we start looking at folks that are doing things like that, and it can be one-on-one. One kid saved is one kid saved.
Yeah.
One kid educated is one kid educated. And so some of us are looking to do things in a big way. But I always say mega is not the size. It's not the number. It's the ministry.
Yeah.
Bishop James, we're virtually running out of time. I just want you to give us some contact numbers, that obviously public numbers, that anyone who's listening in could call you if they've heard something during the course of this program this evening that could be of some help.
Okay, I'm going to give out my cell phone. I do answer it. As I said, I'm out of state until the end of this week, but I will be back next week. But all of Homeland Security says, if you see something, say something, and that's call it in to your local police department. Call it into your state police department. If you see something, say something. But if you need to just contact me, question me, and please don't think I'm trying to blow you off. But if there's any way I can help you, if I can help you set up anything, if you want me to come in your state, 973-941-3150. That's my direct.
3150? So to get in touch
3150.
973-941-3150. Is that correct?
That is correct, Kay.
973-941-3150 to get in touch with Bishop James, everyone. So please keep that in mind, and we're going to be having you again and again. Bishop James, thank you so much. Please
thank you,
don't
Kay.
Let
I've got to get
you.
Back. I've got to get back to my meeting. But thank you guys for having me, and God bless you. Be safe.
Thank you.
It's a walking anthology of information. So much going on.
Yeah, I know.
And,
he's something. Yeah.
Yeah, we need him in New York.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
Boy,
I tell you.
Yeah.
You know?
And, wow, we are going to be repeating and repeating this program, everyone. So make sure that you notice the date of Bishop Jethro James has been on, and he's with Homeland Security. He's a minister, and he can help us in our endeavors. Kay Thompson here.
Along with Wayne Gilman and the legendary Eric Payne of film and movie making and all sorts of stuff.
Lisa.
I want to thank you. Excuse me.
Thank
you. Interruptions.
The gala.
Right.
Gala.
You have to mention
this,
that. Right.
Yeah, right. It's this Sunday, the 19th. You know, we're going to be there.
Right.
So anybody can tune in next week, and we're archived. You can hear us at any time. Thank you.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
So.